Now we're rolling. Where were we? Beit Nehemiah Shem B'Yad Yeshua. So the description here is very generic. God gave him over into the hands of Israel. There's no direct description of any kind of supernatural or direct divine intervention. It says Vayakum Vayit Nehemiah Shem B'Yad Yisrael Vayakum V'Yerdufum Atzidon Rabba, that Israel chased them, ran after them, smote them all the way up to the north in Tzidon Rabba. The expressions here, Vaitnem, Vayakum, Vayerdufum, God gave them over, they smote, they chased. Vayakum ad bilti yeshilo sarid, they smote them until the end of the battle. Vayas lahem Yehoshua kasher amar lo Hashem. And Yehoshua did exactly as God had told him he would do, namely, Yitzusahem Ikev et Makavotahem Seraf Be'esh. He was able to be victorious not only against the soldiers, but against the chariots too. And then the rest of the parak is what I call cleanup and summary. Cleanup in terms of the campaign itself, and then the summary of all of the different areas in the land of Israel that Yeshua was able to conquer. So we talked at length last week about the fact that that this battle stands out differently from all of the others in the absence of any kind of direct divine engagement. And what we started to do was to trace the sequence of the entire Sefer. And that's one of the reasons what's really where I wanted to pick up today a little bit, and to specifically with regards to a source on the source page that you have, which we will look at in a moment, that I think is one of the most profound sources for our understanding of the relationship between God and Israel, and especially as it applies to modern Jewish history. The most powerful and relevant sources. We're going to look at it in detail. Just wanted to give you that introduction and hype to it, because I'm always very moved by it. I call it my favorite medrash. Very powerful piece. But to understand it, basically, our study of Sefer Yehoshua is essentially focused on the battles and the relationship between God and Israel in these battles. So if we trace them down, we start with Yericho. After Yericho, the next major campaign is Ai. After Ai, right, the Darom, and then Zepho. Dvir Yerushalayim, and Chatzor. Darom and Zepho, south and north. And if we look at each of these from the perspective of what role God played versus what role Yehoshua played. What role God played versus what role Yehoshua played. We start with Yericho. Yericho is completely fought by God. There's virtually no role to Yehoshua. If we go back even to the very initial story in Yehoshua, namely the prophecy with the meeting that Yehoshua has with the angel, right before he starts Sefer Yehoshua, right before he starts the battle at Yericho, he meets this angel, and this angel says to him, Sar Tzva Hashem Anochi, I'm the ministering angel of the army of God, I've come now. Remember that story? It was last year somewhere. Tells him to take off his shoes. And we had talked about the fact that the shoes are a symbol of the uniform of a soldier, and if the angel is saying to him, take off your shoes, he's saying to him essentially, this is not your battle, this is my battle. I'm going to fight this battle today. Remember we had a whole discussion, I read you this famous Radak, where the Radak says that time of war is not the time for sitting and learning Torah. Remember? The Radak has this polemic about the fact that Chazal in the Gemara Megillah say that Yehoshua was being chastised for engaging in war when he should have been sitting in the Beis Medrash and learning Torah. So the Tak says, Lo eit milchama eit limud Torah. They're two different things. We had a whole discussion about this polemic, this famous Radak. And I suggested to you that the pshat of the Perek actually is in line with the Gemara. That time was the time Dafka to sit in the Beis Medrash, because the battle of Yericho was a battle that God was going to fight. with the walls and the trumpets and the wall coming down. Essentially, this was God's battle. Yeshua would... What role did Yeshua play in the Battle of Jericho? The only role left for him? Not much. Cleanup. It's called a cleanup. Right. After the walls come down, they went in, each neged achid, they went in with their swords, and they finished the battle. But the battle had essentially been won the moment the walls came. Jericho, from Jericho we go to Ai. Ai was a little bit of a different story. God's role in Ai is very different than God's role in Jericho or any of the other campaigns, because Jericho was essentially a tiny little city that thought they could go in with 2,000 soldiers and wipe it out. In the end, they were massacred. So what was God's role in the Battle of Jericho? The Battle of Ai? Second time they go back by a plan designed by God and orchestrated by God. God gives Yeshua the battle plan, so that is true. The battle plan itself is articulated by God and given to Yeshua, but there's another role that God plays in that battle. Why was the battle lost in the first place? Because they had violated the cheirim of Jericho. So the role that God played in that battle starts with...
It's like a punishment?
Right. It starts with the loss itself. The loss itself is a divinely orchestrated event because of the cheirim of Jericho. And the cheirim leads them to drawing lots. Remember the lots that they have to draw? There's a great deal of engagement with the Urim Betumim and the lots and who's responsible, etc. God is clearly still running the show. On the other hand, when they finally go to battle, who leads them into battle? Yeshua takes the entire army and leads them into Ai. So there's kind of a balance between the two. Mechamet HaDarom is the story of Gibeon. And here, I want to come back to one of the things we spoke about when we did the battle, when we learned about the battle in Gibeon. Because, if you remember, we had a whole discussion about the nature of the miracle, sun standing still. Mm-hmm. And I had suggested to you a number of different options as to what the miracle of Shemesh B'Gibeon Dom meant. From the classic traditional interpretation, which is that Yeshua made the sun stand still and the moon stand still and the entire cosmos stand on its heels, to a very creative and somewhat controversial suggestion that seems to be the position of the Rambam and the Meiri, that all he really did was fight the battle at an accelerated rate, as if it was a long day. And then Shemesh B'Gibeon Dom is not a request asking God to make the sun stand still, but rather an expression of thanksgiving, a shira, a one-line song after the battle, thanking God for having given them the power to do what would normally take 3 days and to do it in one. And in that context, the role of God in that battle would have been perceived in what sense? Where was the miracle of God's role there? Well, number one, the ability to fight faster, kfitzat haderech, and number two, remember the hail?
The heavens.
Remember the hail that came down and wiped out the enemy as they're in retreat? So we had the barad, and we had the, I call it the kfitzat haderech, the quick pace of the war. Bottom line, God's role there is backup. Right. God played backup.
Hashem's role in
any campaign, because it's more engaged. It's true, but there it was more overt. Then the heavens opened up in the middle of the summer and the hailstones wiped out enemy. How often do you have hail in Israel that is strong enough to destroy an enemy in the middle of the battlefield?
In the
in the south of the country.
In the summer.
In the valley. Right? In the whole, it's
Yeah, I just don't know how, I think.
Which what I'm getting at is, yeah.
It's like, to me, it's like splitting hair. To me, he's always the backup.
God is always the backup, but there's a difference between an event which is so extraordinary that you can point to it and say, this looks like miraculous intervention. Not quite, so within the framework of nature. It's not the walls coming down at Yericho, and it's not the lots determining who's responsible for the failure at Ai, but there's still something that's more extraordinary. You still have this description, and it's more not necessarily as much as what was, but as much as what is described. You still have this description of God made hail come down upon the enemy and destroy them as they were retreating. Okay, the pasuk in a moment. Yeah, they were already going back. The battle, the army had broke, and they were already on the retreat. Here, pasuk yud aleph, parak yud pasuk yud aleph. Vayhi benusam mipnei Yisrael heim bimorad Beit Choron. They're on the retreat down the hillside of Beit Choron. VaHashem hishlich aleihem avanim gdolot min hashemayim. And God threw down upon them great stones. So, yes, it has a couch of a natural event, but it's described very clearly as an act of God in the process of the battle. And it's not in the main campaign, it's in the retreat. That's why I call it backup, because it's in the part two of the campaign. There is a role that God plays, and in the end, by Shemesh B'Givondom, the pasuk describes how something like this was unprecedented, that God would listen to man and fight the battle according to God, man's plan, or man's design, opposite what happened at Ai. But there's still a role that is described. Whereas when we get to step four, and that's really why I wanted you to see this. When we get to step four, the only role that God plays in this battle, as described, is when he says to Yeshua, don't worry, I'll be with you. The rest of the campaign, as it's described, there is no point in the story where it says, and God did this or God did that. So when I look at the role of God in each campaign, what you find, what you sense, is that the text describes God's role as retreating from the forefront of the story. That's the major theme that I wanted to convey. Which, whether or not there is a greater divine role in protecting the army of Israel or bringing the walls down, it's not so much the question of how large the miracle is, rather, what role is ascribed to God in the overt description of the plan?
Actually described.
Correct.
Verbally.
How much they are relying, therefore, on what we would call the kind of nisim of Nisei Mitzrayim. You have to agree, I would assume, that the kind of miraculous intervention that we had when we left Egypt was significantly different than the kind of miraculous intervention we would describe if we were talking, for example, about the victory of the Six-Day War. There's a fundamental difference, both philosophically and halachically, between what we call Nes Nigla and Nes Nistar. Open miracles and hidden miracles. Open miracles which defy the laws of nature, and hidden miracles in which there is a sequence of events that is completely natural, and yet we ascribe God's role to protecting us, like Purim. That's the difference between Purim and Yetziat Mitzrayim. In the extreme paradigms of divine intervention, you have Yetziat Mitzrayim on the one hand and Purim on the other. They set up completely different paradigms of the role of God in the unfolding of the story, and therefore the role of man. The greater the role of God, the lesser the role of man. Think about the Makot Mitzrayim. What role did Israel play in the plagues of Egypt? What role did Israel play in Makat Bechorot? What role did Israel play even in Kriyat Yamsuf? We're going to trace that in a second. But clearly, what you have here, I think, is a similar progression, where the role of God decreases, thereby increasing
Yehoshua.
The role of Yehoshua and the role of Israel.
We have to say the overt.
Overt, supernatural, direct, correct.
Maybe that's...
That which leaves more room for man's engagement. In other words, the fact that God is engaged in protection is not the issue. The issue is what role Yehoshua plays. My concern is less the role of God as much as it is the role of Yehoshua and the army of Israel. And the more direct, supernatural, overt, clear, and open role God plays, the smaller the role for Yehoshua. Go back to the model of the Sar Tzva Hashem, who says to Yehoshua, take off your shoes, this battle's mine. Versus the battle in the south, where God says to Yehoshua, Yehoshua, I'll be with you. We've gone quite a distance between one to the other. It's one of the reasons why I'm so convinced that this miracle of Givon is not the cosmic sun standing still, but a much more subtle miracle, because otherwise it doesn't fit the whole pattern of the Sefer. And I'm very convinced that this is actually the message of the Sefer, that as we mature and as we begin to gain a foothold both politically and militarily, God retreats his overt role, thereby opening up the role for Yehoshua and the army of Israel to play. It's kind of like a weaning off of the reliance of the miracles that led us out of Egypt.
It's like raising children.
100%. The only thing is that it's counterintuitive theologically, because we are trained to think of the more God does for us, the better. And what Tanakh tries to teach us, amongst its many messages, is the less God does for us, the better. And that's what's counterintuitive. And to show this to you, Chazal described this in midrashic terms in a way that is really remarkable. This is essentially the message that this medrash that we're going to read now conveys, not necessarily in the context of Sefer Yehoshua, but in a much more global Tanakh context. We will see it here in the context of Sefer Yehoshua. We will also, in a moment, go back and look at this in the context of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So now take a look at this medrash. Which is on your source, first page of your source pages, which says Echa Rabba. Says the Medrash, Arba Melachim, the story of four kings. Ma shetavaze lo tavaze. Ve'elu hein, David ve'asa Yehoshaphat ve'chizkiyahu. Four kings, each of whom made a different request from God. And these four kings are David, Asa, Yehoshaphat, and Chizkiyahu. Now, unless you've studied the Book of Kings, most people are unfamiliar with the names Asa and Yehoshaphat. But I'm assuming that we are more familiar with David and Chizkiyahu. Give or take, even if we don't know the stories of Chizkiyahu, but we can generally identify who they are. Asa and Yehoshaphat are a little bit more mysterious to us because they're somewhat closed books. But what I will tell you is the following, that chronologically, we are working through, if we're going from David to Chizkiyahu, we're talking about approximately 300 years. And along the way, the kings in the house and lineage of David, of Asa and Yehoshaphat, are steps along the way of kings who led major, major campaigns. Asa led a military campaign of hundreds of thousands of soldiers. Yehoshaphat led a united campaign together with Ahav. It's one of the first times, one of the only times we had a united alliance between north and south. These were four major warriors, major battles of kings of Israel.
If I'm not mistaken, you used this before. before.
I have. I would use it many times.
Because we've had this and we discussed it, and it is an amazing midrash.
It'll come up over and over again. And we've discussed it before. We'll probably discuss it again. Because I will throw this medrash in wherever I can. It's kind of like it's my favorite medrash. But you see it here so clearly. You see it here. This is the progression. And the four battles that Yehoshua plays out, or that Yeshua engages in, will parallel the four steps that the Medrash describes, which are parallel to the four steps of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Want to get a series of fours? Here's where it's at. So let's go through this. If we've done it before, I'll do it a little bit faster. David Amar. David made the following declaration, which is part of Tehillim Yudchet and Shmuel Bet Perek Lamed Dalet, I think. Shirat David. It's part of Shirat David. Shmuel Bet Perachav Bet. At the centerpiece of Shirat David, which is David's song of thanksgiving to God after his great victory, he says the following, Erdof Oivai Va'asigem. Let me chase my enemies and I will pursue them. Or I will overtake them. Amalo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Oseh, I will do exactly as you describe, as it says, Hareyu Dechtiv, Vayakim David Mehaneshef Ve'ad Erev L'mocharatam. David smote them from evening to the next evening and destroyed them. In other words, what the Medrash is describing is the fact that David campaigned against his enemies, fought his battles, offered thanksgiving to God. David is clearly understood to be the greatest military warrior in the history of the kings of Israel, led the largest campaigns and the most significant battles. In the entire history of the life of David, there is no supernatural or divine overt miraculous intervention at any point. It's really a remarkable statement, but that is true. Amad Asa v'Amar. Asa then is the next generation of major warrior, major battle campaign. Which what's significant about David, Asa, Yoshafat, and Chizkiyahu is that they are the four largest military battles in Sefer Melachim. All the other battles dwarf in comparison to the global scale of the campaign that each of them fight. Chizkiyahu against the entire conquering army of Assyria. Yehoshaphat is a joint battle against Aram, but it's the empire of Aram, but it's a joint battle together with Ahab, so you have a unified army of Israel. As I told you, the numbers are astronomical, and of course David, who campaigns the largest number of battles against to expand the borders of Israel. Amad Asa v'yamar en ani en bikoach laharok. God, I don't have the strength to finalize the final step and kill the enemy. El ani rodefotam, I'll chase them. Beta osa, and you kill them. As it says, Amar lo, God said to him, ani osa, that's fine. As it says, v'yirdefem asa v'ha'am asher imo, Asa and his people chased the enemy. Ki nishberu lifnei Hashem v'lifnei machaneu. But in the final blow, it says that the enemy's camp was broken before God and before his army. Meaning, it doesn't say that it was before Asa, it says that it broke before God, lifnei Asa, en k'tiv kan, elo lifnei Hashem. In other words, that which we would have otherwise intuitively thought was a positive description, a theological statement, that the enemy was broken before God because God was fighting our battles with us, this medrash sees in the negative sense, as a deterioration of status from the engagement of David and Melech. David was prepared to fight the battle until the very end. Asa, who allows God to have a greater role, that role is described as ein bikoach, as a lack of strength on behalf of the king. And so what you have is the opposite. As man retreats in his role, the role of God increases. Whereas here, as God's role decreases, man's role increases. So it's a question of who's driving the ship, who's driving the trajectory. Is God retreating and thereby increasing the role for man to play? Or is man retreating and creating more reliance on God. That's the give or take. The third step is Yehoshaphat. And Yehoshaphat, the expression "Ein bikoach," I have no strength, actually comes from the text in the story of Yehoshaphat, because there it says, and I put this in tiny little print in the middle of the Medrash. The Medrash doesn't quote it, but I stuck it in there for you to see. Where in Divrei Hayomim, Yehoshaphat's prayer to God before the battle begins, "Elokeinu, halosh tishpot bam, judge them, ki ein banu koach lifnei ha'amon harav hazeh abaleinu." We don't have the strength to fight this great multitude that has come upon us. We don't know what to do. We're eyes upon you. This is a text, by the way, that we say in Tachanun every day. Said Yehoshua, "En bikoach lo larog v'lo lirdof." I have neither the strength to chase nor to kill. But rather, "Ani omer shira v'ata oseh." You fight this battle, and I'll sing shira. As it says, "Ube'et echelu berinah u'tehila natan Hashem mo'avim o'bnei Amon u'mo'av." Yehoshaphat sang shira, and God destroyed the enemy. The final stage, "Amad Chizkiyahu v'yamar, ani ein bikoach lo laharog v'lo lirdof v'lo lamar shira. Al ani yashen o'mitati." I have neither the strength to fight, nor to chase, nor to kill. What will I do? I'll go to sleep. And you fight this battle. Yeah, we've done this before. I think we may have done it at the very beginning. Same Medrash. We may have done it at the very beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. Because it probably, or this year. Amar lo kadosh baruch hu, ani oseh, shenehemar, vahi balayla hu, vayetze malach Hashem v'yach b'machane Ashur, 185,000 v'yashkimu b'bok v'nei kulam p'kavim etin. The famous story of Chizkiyahu, where the Malach goes out in the middle of the night and destroys the entire Assyrian army as they are encamped surrounding Yerushalayim in the siege of Yerushalayim. And we read it as a reason why it's famous is because we read it as a Haftorah. Anything we read as a Haftorah is famous, because that's where most people know Tanakh from. The story of the four lepers who are outside the camp, and they go to the camp and they discover that there's food there, etc. We read it as a Haftorah, Pashim, etc. So the four stages, David, Asa, Yehoshaphat, and Hezekiah. The four stages are described as, in the case of David, Ani, what are the four stages described as? Let's just get the terminology. Erdof, Avai, Be'av, Asigem. Laharog, Lirdof, and Shira. To chase, or to be engaged in the battle, Laharog, to take the final step in the battle, and to sing Shira as a song of victory. In the case of Asa, he's prepared to sing Shira, he's prepared to chase, but the final stage is missing. In the case of Yehoshaphat, he'll prepare to sing Shira, but we're going to drop out La Rogue and Lirdof. In the case of Chizkiyahu, he's going to go to sleep. And the reason why it's described as go to sleep is because the pasuk in Yeshayahu that describes that battle states, "Lech ami bo b'chadarecha uskor dlatecha ba'adecha chavi ki matrega ad yavor zam." Go hide in your rooms, close the door behind you, hide for a moment until the evil passes over you. The description that Yeshayahu gives to the people that says, "Go into your rooms, close the door, I will destroy your enemies, I will fight this battle for you, you'll wake up in the morning and the war will be gone. Until the evil passes by." I think we probably did this part too, but these four stages parallel exactly the stages of development from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. In reverse order. By the way, by Chizkiyahu, we're about 100 years away from the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the end of the kingdom. From here, we're on a trajectory. Post Chizkiyahu, we're almost on a one-way street to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So this is not a positive trajectory by any stretch of the imagination. In case of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the first major campaign against their enemies, the first stage of war against Egypt is?
Makkah.
And specifically?
Makkah
Bechorah. Where are Bnei Yisrael in Makkah Bechorah? Not only are they in their homes, but the Torah prohibits us from leaving our homes. The Pasuk says that no man was allowed to leave his house. You walked out of the house, you were subject to the potential destruction of the Mashchit of the Malach HaMavos. So Makkah Bechorah, the role that God played was total. The role that we played was zero. What's fascinating to me always is that there's no Shira after Makkah Bechorah. After Kriyat Yam Suf, there's Shira. There's no Shira after Makkah Bechorah. I'm not sure it's a function of time. I think it's a function of you can't sing Shira on a victory that you played no role in. You can't sing Shira on a victory you weren't even entitled to see. And they weren't entitled to see it. You have to have a certain level of entitlement to be able to see the victory against your enemy. The second stage, the next battle after Makkah Bechorah, is what in the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. What's the next stage of the battle against Mitzrayim in as they leave? Kriyat Yam Suf. Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem Nilcham Lem BeMitzrayim. The next major time they engage the Egyptians is at Kriyat Yam Suf. Kriyat Yam Suf, who destroyed the Egyptians? God. Who chased after the Egyptians? Who did the Ridifan, the Harigah? Who chased and destroyed the Egyptians? God. What role did Israel play? Shira.
Rabbi, you said, in talking of the four kings, it's not a good, when you look at it on paper, it's not a good line
nope.
to see what's happening. No one ever said, oh my gosh, it's terrible, the people didn't play any role. No one never said anything negative about that.
Oh, the Nevi'im certainly did. Absolutely did. And the expression, Ein Bikoach, the trajectory from David HaMelech to the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, the message that Tanakh conveys over and over and over and over again is that this is a negative.
Even in Mitzrayim, when the people had no part in it, that they stayed in their homes, there was criticism that the people...
It's not a question of criticism. There it's not a question of criticism, because that's where they're starting from. There it's a question of maturity. You've got to get them, you've got to wean them off the reliance on miracles. But once they reach that point,
right.
the fallback into this, they can be held accountable for.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to see that again in a moment.
Yeah.
We're going to see that again
right.
here in a second. But from Makkah Bechorah, we get to Kriyat Yam Suf. Let me just finish the trajectory, and then I'll take it to Yeshua, and you'll see exactly where I'm going with it. From Makkah Bechorah to Kriyat Yam Suf, we have Shira. What's the next battle they play that they engage in as they leave Egypt? What's the next event? After Kriyat Yam Suf, after Egypt's gone, what's the next military campaign?
Amalek.
And Amalek is fascinating because, what's the story of Amalek? God says, Moshe says to Yeshua, Tsei v'chor lanu anashim, go pick your army, v'lachem ba'amalek, and go wage war against Amalek. So here, we are certainly much more engaged in the battle. The only difference being, what does it say? And Moshe was said, he and Hor and Aaron will stand on the top of the mountain, will take the staff of God with them, and as Moshe would lift up his hands with the staff, they'd be victorious. As Moshe would put down his staff, they would be losing the battle, which means that whereas Yeshua is engaged in the battle, who's claiming victory? Who's taking the final step? The next military campaign that they will fight, this is a harder one, the next military campaign that they will fight is should have been the conquest of Canaan. But that went wrong. Right? It should have been the story of the spies, should have been the prelude to the beginning of the conquest of Canaan. But the sin of the spies sent everything into tailspin, sent us back 40 years. So we ended up 40 years later entering into Canaan from the other side, from the east under Moshe, and the first campaigns, therefore, after the story of the spies, which is in Parshat Shlach, is in Parshat Chukat, which is the battle against Sichon and Og, the Amorite kingdoms on the east bank of the Jordan. And what's fascinating there is that God comes to Moshe and says to him, I will be with you. And that's about the extent of God's role in the battle. The rest of it is described as Moshe took the people, took the army, went and fought against Sichon, was victorious, took all the lands, went and fought against Og, was victorious, took all the lands. There's no description of God's role in that battle whatsoever. So there, the parallel to David is very clear. In other words, what you have is a trajectory that matures us from the total reliance on the miracles of Makot Mitzrayim through a greater involvement of Israel at each stage, ultimately to the weaning off of the reliance of miracles altogether. What happens in Sefer Yehoshua? Sefer Yehoshua starts how?
Same way.
Sefer Yehoshua starts with the crossing of the Jordan. And if you remember back to our discussion at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, we said that that Yehoshua, in a sense, takes a starting point back to where we are with Moshe. In other words, we go through the process of parallel to Moshe for many reasons, including the need to demonstrate a connection between Yehoshua and Moshe. But the four battles that Yehoshua campaigns are very parallel to these four battles, namely Yericho, Ai, Givon, and Chatzot. And the whole structure of the Sefer is designed to reflect this same kind of process of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, weaning Bnei Yisrael off of the reliance of miracles, off of the reliance of God, on God, to an independence that is reflected in the opening verses when it says that they ate of the produce of the land the first time. The man stopped. That's already a signal of what's to come. The man stops, the produce of the land is theirs to work and to create, so too is the conquest of Canaan and the taking of the land. But it's a process. They have to be weaned off of this reliance, whereas in the case of Moshe it took 40 years, in the case of Bnei Yisrael it took four battles, one after the other, because they're already there. We needed to go through that process again to demonstrate the message one more time. One last comment on this topic, and that is, Faye, you asked me before, where does it say? What's the verse? What's the source for it? So I'll show you what I think one of the strongest sources for it is, and it's the very end of Chumash. If you take a look at the end of Sefer Dvarim, in Parshat Vezot HaBracha, which we read in Simchas Torah, past the very last pasuk of the bracha, the very, very last pasuk of the bracha, which is Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Chaf Tet. Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Chaf Tet. What does the pasuk say? Ashrecha Yisrael, happy are you, O Israel. Mi chamocha, who is like you? Am nosha b'Hashem, a nation nosha b'Hashem, which means nosha means, unfortunately it's too often translated as saved, but that is a very almost Christian translation. Nosha means victorious. No, different word altogether. Nosha is Hoshia. Ana Hashem Hoshiana. Yeshua. Right? Nif'al. Nosha. In the reflexive verb, a nation victorious by God's help, Nosha Ba'Hashem, Magen Ezrecha, God who is the shield and your help, Va'asher Cherev Ga'avatecha, a nation whose pride is in their sword. Now that doesn't mean that we are proud to be warriors. What that means is, Va'asher Cherev Ga'avatecha, you will destroy your enemies against you, and you will tread upon their high places. What is this pasuk describing?
Right.
If you take the sword, and you take the shield, and then know that you are Noshah Ba'Hashem, and that's the Ashrecha, that's the Tov, that's the happy O Israel, is that we play the role, we take the lead, we take the sword, and we are Noshah Ba'Hashem. That's the paradigm of David HaMelech. That's the paradigm of this battle in the north. That's the paradigm of the battle of Sichon and Og. It's not the reliance on miracles that is the paradigm or the ideal. It's not Yetziat Mitzrayim that is the goal. Purim is a much greater goal. I once told you the Medrash that says that Esther is called the dawn because Esther is the end of all miracles. Remember that, Medrash? We talked about when we did about Purim. Ma Esther sof, ma shachar sof kol alayla af Esther sof kol anisim. Just as the dawn marks the end of night, so too Esther marks the end of miracles. Because that's considered a higher level of engagement with God, because I don't need the miracles. The miracles are a crutch. The miracles are I get into trouble and God will come and save me. But if I'm engaged and if I'm driving and if I'm battling for the protection of my people and then are able to sing Shira and thank God for his backup role, if you will, that's a much higher level of engagement in relationship with God. That's what Yeshua is trying to express and to set before us. So if there's a message that comes out of Sefer Yeshua, I think it's this one. The weaning off of the miracles of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the recreation of this parallel structure, and the message that comes with it, that we are moving forward. The Medrash traces that same trajectory in reverse as we go from the height of David HaMelech to the era of Achorban of Chizkiah. Question. Any comment, question? All right. With that, we come to our conclusion of Perek Yud, study of Perek Yud Aleph, and we move to Perek Yud Bet. Perek Yud Bet. Ve'ele malchei ha'aretz asher hiku b'nei Yisrael vayishu et arzam be'eva hayarden mizracha ha'shemesh. These are the names of the kings of the land that Yeshua, that b'nei Yisrael smote and inherited their land or settled their land be'eva hayarden mizracha ha'shemesh, first on the east side of the Jordan from Nachal Arnon ad Har Chemon v'chol Arava mizracha. From Nachal Arnon all the way up to the Bashan, the entire eastern bank of the Jordan. That was the conquest from Sichon and Og. Ad Har Hermon, all the way up to the Mount Hermon, the entire east bank. Sichon Melech Amori Yosheb Becheshbon, the names of the kings start with Sichon, king of Amori in Cheshbon, Moshe Ma'aroer Asher Asfat Nachal Arnon V'Tocha Nachal V'Chatzia Gilad V'Ad Yabok Nachal Gvu B'nei Amon, whose reign carried from the Arnon until the Yabok River. All of this area, which was originally the area of Ammon and Moab, that was the ruling territory of Sichon. V'harava ad yam kinvot mizracha, and the arava all the way up to the edge of the east bank of the Kinneret. V'ad yam arava yam ha-melech mizracha derech Beit Yishimon, from the Kinneret down to Yam HaMelech eastward. U'mitiman tachat ashtot ha-piska, u'gvul Og melech ha-bashan miyeta ha-refaim ha-yoshev ba-ashtot u-bedrei, and then the border with Og, king of the Bashan. ומשהו בהר חרמון ובסלחה ובכל הבשן עד גבול הגשורי והמאחתי וחצי הגלעד גבול סיחון מלך חשבון. And his reign ruled all of the Hermon and the Bashan and the Gilad here all the way down to the Yabok, which was the border with Sichon. So between the army, between the kingdom of Sichon and the kingdom of Og, the conquest of those two campaigns had taken all of the east bank of the Jordan. Fall back to summary of Sefer of Pashat Chukat. Moshe Eved Hashem uBnei Yisrael Hikum. This was land taken by Moshe, servant of God. Vaitnam Moshe Eved Hashem Yerusha LeRuveni VeLagadi VeChatzi Shevet Menashe. And those were given by Moshe to Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. VeEle Malchei HaAretz Asher Hikar Yehoshu uBnei Yisrael BeEver HaYarden Yama. And now, the list of kings that Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael took on the west side of the Jordan. Mi-Balgad, b'vigat ha-Levanon, v'yad ha-har ha-chalaka ole Seira, from Balgad, which is in the north, all the way to Har Seir in the south. V'itna Yehoshua l'shiftei Yisrael Yerusha kimach l'kotam, and those lands Yehoshua gave to the tribes of Israel according to their divisions. Bahar, the mountains, u'bashvela, and the plains, u'ba'arava, in the flatlands and the plains, Uba Asherot, Uba Midbar, Uba Negev, Achiti, Ha'emori, Vaknani, Aprizi, Achivi, Vayevusi. The land that belonged to the seven indigenous nations of Canaan. What are those lands and what are the names of the kings? See, here's the list. Melech Yericho, Echad. King of Yericho, one. Melech Ha'ai, Hashemitzad Bet El, Echad. Melech Yerushalayim, Echad. Melech Chevron, Echad. Melech Yarmut, Echad. Melech Lachish, Echad. Melech Eglon, Echad. Melech Gezer, Echad. Melech Dvir, Echad. Melech Geder, Echad. Melech Chorma, Echad. Melech Arad, Echad. Melech Livna, Echad. Melech Adulam, Echad. Melech Makeda, Echad. I don't need to translate, right? Melech Beit El Echad, Melech Tapuach Echad, Melech Hefer Echad, Melech Hafek Echad, Melech Lashavon Echad, Melech Madon Echad, Melech Hatzor Echad, Melech Shimon Mirosh, Miroon Echad, Melech Achshaf Echad, Melech Tanach Echad, Melech Megiddo Echad, Melech Kedesh Echad, Melech Yokna'am LaKarmel, sister city to St. Louis, Echad, Melech Dor LeNafat Dor Echad, Melech Goyim LeGilgal Echad, Melech Tirza Echad, Kol Melechim Shloshim Ve'Echad. Reads like a spreadsheet. Doesn't it read like a spreadsheet?
Or it's like, check.
Check.
We got this one.
Got this one. Check. And then summarize. Wouldn't it have been simpler to write Melech Yericho, Ay, Yerushalayim, Chevron, Yarmut, Lachish, Eglon, da 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 da? One each time. It's a very strange parak. It's a very strange parak. So what's the answer? Emphasis?
It's very impressive. At this list.
One by one.
Impressive, one by one. If that was the case, then say Melech Yericho Echad, Melech Ha'ai Shtayim, Melech Yericho Shalosh, Melech Chevron Arba, Melech Yarmut Chamesh. What's that? Echad, 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 Echad.
Because that's how they were taken.
One by one. Maybe?
You don't know.
We're brainstorming. We're brainstorming. What does it sound like? What does it look like?
It's like a shear.
Say it again.
It looks like a shear.
It looks like Shira. It looks just like Shirat Ta'azinu. There are two types of physical formats of Shira in Tanakh. You familiar with that? Two types of Shira and how they lay themselves out physically in a Tanakh. Basically, Shira is identified in Tanakh by virtue of the fact that it's written in a different format. So the classic ones we're most familiar with is Shirat HaYam, where you have this space. Classic ones are Shira like Shirat Hayam, Shirat Devora, Shirat David, which are written in a kind of space like this. Sometimes there's two rows, sometimes there's three rows. If it's three rows, it looks like this. In other words, you have line, space, line. If you go open up to Shirat HaYam, you'll see it very, very visibly. Shirat HaYam is in Pashat B'Shalach. In Shemot Perek Tadvav, you can see physically the layout. Right? As Yishim Moshev and Esau, the Shirat Zot, and more, Ashir Lashem Ki Goga, you have this constant space and line. It almost looks like if you would think of the text as bricks and the space as the mortar that holds the bricks, then it looks like a wall. And that's exactly how Chazal describe it. This brick on top of space, space on top of brick. And that's how Shirat Hayam is written, Shirat David, Shirat Devorah, Shoftim. They all have that same format. There's another kind of Shira, however, in Tanakh, and that is how Shirat HaAzinu is written.
Right.
Correct. Shirat HaAzinu is written in two columns.
Right.
Hazinu Hashemayim Badabera V'tishma Aretz Murfi Arav Kamata Lekhtin Zalka Aretz Imati. Two rows.
Right.
And that's how it's laid out in the Chumash. That's how it's laid out in a Sefer Torah as well. Shira is identifiable. Shira is identifiable. Now, only Shira that's long. Short Shira, one-line Shira, no point. So we have examples in Tanakh of Shira that's one line or two lines that doesn't have that physical layout because it's simply too short. Assuming that Shemesh B'Givondom, as we said before, was a Shira, so the whole Shira is one sentence. Another example of such a short Shira that doesn't have the physical layout is in Pashat Chukat, after these battles that we just described. In the middle of Perek Chof Aleph, in Bamidbar. Az Yashir Yisrael et Hashira Hazot. Shira, Israel sang this song. Ali be'er enula be'er chafu esarim karu nidve ha'am b'mochakek b'mishanotam b'mivam matana u'mimatana nachliya u'minachliya b'mot u'mibamot agaya shebistei mo'av o'shepizka v'nishkafa p'nei yeshimon. The substance and the text and the meaning of the shira is not my issue, but it's a short shira. It's three psukim. That two or three psukim shira is written in regular text. There's no spaces there, but it's clearly shira. It says so. Az yashili b'nei Yisrael. But it's just too short to lay it out that way. So it's long Shira that generally gets laid out. Short Shira is usually simply referred to in one line. Another example of a very short Shira. I'm going to love this one. Where are you up to in Shmuel?
I'm looking to start Perek. Tet.
Shmuel Aleph or Bet?
Bet.
Boy, you're flying.
No. We did Aleph last year.
How far did you get?
We finished.
Oh, good. Okay. So, Shmuel Aleph Perek Yidchet. You take a look in Perek Yidchet, Pasuk Vav. Shmuel Aleph Perek Yidchet. That's okay. This is a reference in Shmuel Aleph. So it doesn't matter. Shmuel Aleph Perek Yidchet. Pasuk Vav. Vahi bevo'am b'shuv David me'akot et ha'plishti v'tetzena ha'nashim Mikol Arei Yisrael, when David came back from the battle against the Plishtim and all of the daughters of Israel came out of the cities, Lashir v'hamucholot likvat Sheul HaMelech, they came out to sing and to dance and to greet Sheul. Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Vav. Betupim b'simcha u'b'shalishim, they were dancing with drums and with timbrels and with all kinds of Ata'anena ha'nashim ha'misachakot v'tomarna. And the women sang the following song, Hika Sha'ul ba'alafav v'David b'divavotav. Very famous shira, because it was the source of a great deal of trouble that came afterwards. But it is shira. There's no question that it is shira. It is shira in not only in tenor, but in context. Because what is shira in Tanakh? And this is true for all shira in Tanakh. When we talk about shira, we're not talking about poetry. When we talk about shira in Tanakh, we are not talking about poetry. Shira in Tanakh is almost always, in fact, I think it is always, related to
Thanksgiving after a battle.
It's always related to some kind of battle. With one exception, it's usually post-battle.
Is it only battle or victorious battle?
Victory against enemies on the battlefield.
So would you use the word that you said, the actual word which you thought was when they interpreted it, it's say, you said...
Nasha, victory, yeah. Victorious, correct. Correct. That's why I think it's the word Yeshua also appears in Tanakh, usually, almost always in the context of military battle. The reason I don't like the word save is because it's a Christian, it's become Christianized. It's become Christological. And it has very significant meaning in Christian theology. But in Tanakh, its context is always Yeshua Nitzachon from Milchama. That's why I prefer the translation of victorious. With one exception, it's always post-victory. What's the one exception? Ha'azinu. Because Ha'azinu is shira pre-victory. Ha'azinu is a shira about the war that will be. But in every other case, Shirat Hayam is all about thanksgiving for victory. Shirat David, right? Biyom hikad David miyad biyom hitzil Hashem et David miyad oivav umiyad umikaf Shaul. It's a song of victory after David. God saved David from the hands of his enemies. Shirat Devorah after the battle of with Sisra. Shirat Be'er in Parshat Chukat after the battle with Sichon. And Shirat Hanashim after the battle of David with the Plishtim, Hikad David Shaul be'alafav David be'rivavotav was a shira after the victory. Shira in Tanakh usually includes a description of the battle. Certainly, the long shira. Short ones less so, but the long shira usually includes a description of the victory, a description of God's role in the battle. Shirat Hayam, Hashem Ish Melchama, Shirat Hashem Ki Ga'oga'a, a description of the victory that we had against our enemies, the magnitude of the victory. The Canaanites were frightened and they're trembling. And usually a description of the implication for the future of where this has led B'nai Israel. What vistas have been opened for us now moving forward. So in Shirat Hayam, for example, the end of the description, end of the Shira describes coming into the land of Israel, Mikdash Hashem Kornu Yadecha, establishing the land, implanting B'nai Israel in the land. There is a future focus as well. Those are the four primary components of Shira, which is what I would expect from a song of thanksgiving. Certainly that's true for Shirat David, certainly true, although we'll discuss it later, greater length in Sefer Shoftim. We'll discuss this vis-a-vis Shirat Devorah. Shirat Nahanashim in Sefer Shmuel, Hikad David, Hikashaul ba'alafav v'David b'rivavatav, is missing key components. Namely, that shira that the ladies sing to David and Saul, that shira is missing key components. What components are is it missing? David victory against the Philistines? Missing key components, though. It's missing God. Problematic. To sing a song of victory to the king and not include include God is problematic in all contexts. Agreed? Now, let's go back to Perek Yud Bet, and with this we will conclude. I'll leave you something to think about. Perek Yud Bet, is this summary or is this Shira? It's written as Shira. And if it's Shira, how is it read? How are you supposed to read it? Why does this word Echad appear every column? Why does it read like an Excel spreadsheet?
There's no praise in it, really.
Well, we'll get to the implications of it being Shira. If it's Shira, it's very problematic. The theology of this parak is enormously problematic if it's Shira.
Well, how do we know that it isn't? That it isn't. The
Echad is not God. Good, no, because it's summary. Kol HaMelachim 31. It's summarized. It's a number.
I know.
It's how many kings? Eile Malchei HaAretz. This is an add up of all of the kings. Right? Each one. The way you read it. In other words, it's read like a marching song with a refrain. One group saying the name of the king, and the next group saying the victory. Melech Yericho, Echad. Melech Ha'ai, Echad. Melech Yerushalayim, Echad. Melech Hebron, Echad. Melech Yarmut, Echad. Melech Lachish, Echad. This is a marching song.
But it doesn't say anything about Hashem.
So could it be written by, like Shira, but it really isn't Shira?
It's written like Shira. It's meant to be Shira. It's meant to be a summary. Eile Malchei Haaretz Asher Hika Bnei Yisrael Asher Hika Yehoshua uBnei Yisrael. These are the kings smitten by Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael. And the only thing missing in this Shira is God's name.
Nothing.
Which is enormously problematic. Enormously problematic. It's meant to be the summary song of thanksgiving after the entire conquest of Canaan. And it begins, these are the kings conquered by Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael, list of the kings 31, end of story.
So it's not a Shira.
It's Shira,
it's not real.
But it's problematic. There's good Shira and there's bad Shira. Like the songs that the women sang to David and Saul was also Shira, but very problematic. Shira doesn't always have to be good. This leads us. This leaves us with a quandary as to whether or not, in that trajectory that we talked about, did they miss the point? Because you take God out of the role too much, and suddenly you forget to put him back in the Shira, and the transition from Perekid Aleph to Perekid Bet is problematic.
They're all called Shira.
They're all called Shira. There's good Shira and there's bad Shira. Shira simply means a song of a victory song. The question is, who are you acknowledging in this victory song?
But this is